At the legislature today, members of the Senate debate a House bill allowing the treasurer's office to set up a voluntary employee retirement system for the private sector. And as we approach the final week of the session, the state's budget is starting to enter the spotlight, but not because it will be an easy one to balance. Members of the press corps will discuss the state's budget woes and more coming up on the legislature today. I'm Ashton Mara. With just 8 days left in the second regular session of the 81st West Virginia Legislature, lawmakers are getting a look at what legislation their colleagues in the other house have passed. As we reported yesterday, senators are now tackling the bills passed by the House. As Aaron Payne reports, delegates are doing the same with the Senate bills.
Crossover day was the final day for senators to pass bills that were introduced in the Senate. Among the bills that made it out include President Jeff Kessler's Future Fund, a bill that would require pseudoephedrine to be available by prescription only, and the Senate's Water Protection Bill that would regulate above-ground storage tanks. Essentially, crossover day served as a tag-out by the senators to turn those bills over to the House. Yesterday, a bipartisan group sent a letter to Governor Tomlin requesting a special session with the sole focus on Senate Bill 373 relating to water protection. The bill's lead sponsor, Senator John Unger, was not pleased with the request.
We have above-ground storage facilities that are not registered, not being inspected, could very well be leaking or spilling in people's groundwater as we speak. And so the urgency is to get this bill done. That was a promise given by the leadership of the House. The President of the Senate's made it very clear there will be no special session. The Senate will not agree to that. He made it very clear.
However, Delegate Misha Poor says that a special session might be necessary to create a bill that works for the people.
All we're saying is allow us to do the people's business for these other bills that are coming over from the Senate that we have to get out for the good of the people, but also allow us ample time to perfect this water bill that is crucial. If you recall, when we first started this bill, it was told to the community that this bill was presented to us so this never happens again. The only way that you can say that it never happens again is if you give the people who were affected particularly an opportunity to bring the issues of their constituents that placed them here. 26 members, which represents 300,000 people in this state, are asking you, please allow us an opportunity to perfect this.
Speaker Tim Miley was initially reported as being against the idea completely, feeling that it would indicate that the House gave up or tried to kill the bill. That was before he read the contents of the letter in depth, which indicate that the delegates only want a special session if they absolutely could not get a bill done by Saturday at midnight. Since then, he has come closer to being on their side, but reiterates that it won't be necessary.
I'm certain that we're going to get a water bill, a comprehensive water bill that offers protection and safety for the citizens of West Virginia. But like I said, if there are some things that might need to be considered that are of a more complex nature, then that might need to be considered over time. But we will get a water bill out. I'm convinced of that. But that letter by those delegates was merely to express their desire that if something is not done or completed by the 60th day, that we extend our work into the week following.
Another Senate bill creating a buzz in the House is developing the Future Fund. But while Speaker Miley and Minority Leader Tim Armstead say the House is not opposed to the idea of investing in the future, current budget demands might make the legislation unwise.
We have to balance the idea that if we're having to look at shortfalls in our budget and at the same time saying we're going to actually put more in savings, basically, There's a bit of a disconnect to that, because if we're taking money out of our current rainy day fund savings account and then we're at the same time creating a new one to put money in, there's some concern about that perhaps it might be a better use at this time to make sure that we're meeting all the needs of our citizens and perhaps looking toward in the long term giving some tax relief to our citizens.
There is some growing concern that establishing a future fund when we need the money currently is something we perhaps need to rethink. But I think, you know, a lot of current needs can be met while still establishing some type of future fund. The form that bill may take is unknown at this point in time, but we'll develop and work through a lot of those issues here in the coming week.
A third bill the House will take up is Senate Bill 6, requiring pseudoephedrine to be available by prescription only. Delegate Don Perdue has been a supporter of the prescription-only measure since the beginning, but fears the bill will be weakened by the House.
As the bill went up to judiciary, I was very secure with it. I think it's perfect the way it is, frankly, and if there's any perfect legislation, which is very rare, for me this one's just right. Having said that, I'm hearing rumors that there are people that are intending to amend the bill up there, and I believe that those amendments will be ultimately aimed at gutting the bill. I cannot see presently any amendments that would be helpful to the situation.
Delegate Armstead says the opposition is not pro-pharmaceutical industry, but pro-law-abiding citizen.
But I think there's some concern about how that would affect people who are, you know, law-abiding citizens, and whether they would then have to go and get a prescription just to be able to get cold medicine that they use periodically. So I think that that's a concern on a lot of our members' part. What we'd like to see, really, or a number of our members would like to see, is something that actually centers in on the people who have had some history of you know, drug abuse or drug crimes, that those people would have to get a prescription. And you can track that through the process that we have now.
The chair of the House Judiciary Committee, Tim Manchin, estimates the bill will be taken up in his committee either Monday or Tuesday. As for the session so far, both parties have felt pretty neutral. While some of the goals of their agendas have been met, others they felt were important were not. For the Republicans, the positives involve helping children and families, but Delegate Armstead says the disappointment lies in what the House was unable to accomplish.
I think there are a lot of things we would have liked to have seen that we think would have improved our economy, would have moved us forward economically. Those were some of the things that we rolled out at the beginning. We didn't see a lot of progress on those, so we're disappointed in that sense, because I think this was a real opportunity this session to do some things to put people back to work and bring people back home to West Virginia. So from that perspective, we would like to see a lot more in terms of our tax structure, in terms of our legal climate, our infrastructure, our education system. And we'll continue to fight for those things.
For the Democrats, while they are also pleased some steps were taken to help children and families, Speaker Miley says one of the biggest disappointments lies in not taking measures to protect the people from fraud.
We didn't get a bill of 4001, which would have reduced or eliminated fraud on the government. I'm disappointed that any member would vote against that bill, because we modeled it exactly, or almost exactly, like Virginia's bill. And 30 other states have some form of that bill, and it's working well for them, and they've never repealed their bills. So clearly it's working for them, and why we couldn't get all of our delegates to understand why that would have been such an important bill is one of the disappointments so far this session.
The House will move forward with the Senate's proposed legislation right up to the midnight deadline on Saturday, March 8th. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
Senators this morning debated a proposed optional retirement system for small businesses. The system would be created through the state treasurer's office, similar to the Smart 529 college savings program. But Republican senators fought back, saying they didn't feel the state needed to step into an area the private sector can already handle. The Senate Pensions Committee took up House Bill 4375, creating the West Virginia Voluntary Employee Retirement Accounts Program. As counsel explained, the program would be available to businesses with up to 100 employees who do not have a current retirement system. Employers or employees could voluntarily opt into the program, automatically deducting a retirement contribution from their paycheck each month. But employers would not be required to contribute to those plans. The bill states an employer who currently has a retirement plan cannot drop it and opt into the state plan, which will be run by the state treasurer's office. Diana Stout serves as general counsel.
The concept of the program is, right now you have a lot of mom and pop shops that have a horrible time retaining and attracting employees and holding on to them. So the concept of this would be that over time this will pay for itself, and that the programs that are offered, for example, by insurance companies, will become much more attractive to those small companies once they've actually had to acclimate and learn how to do this.
To start, the bill gives the treasurer's office access to up to $3 million from the unclaimed property account, but that money must be repaid by 2024. Stout says it will initially cost around $250,000 to hire outside counsel with expertise in the investment area. She says the office will also look to hire a third-party administrator with investment options and two or three in-house employees to run the program, along with its educational and marketing components. But ultimately, she says, it's about saving the state in the long term from a generation of West Virginians who will rely on the government for help after retirement.
I really am worried that my Social Security is not going to be there for a long term for me. So we have more and more people that have no retirement, access to no retirement plans, and I worry that there won't be Social Security for a lot of people. So you've got what the state's going to ultimately have to do long term is take care of these people, because Social Security is not going to be sufficient for them to live on as long as people are living today. So we need to do things to encourage people to save money.
Senator Mitch Carmichael says industry representatives have reached out to him expressing concerns with the program, including John Pauley, executive director of the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors in Charleston.
We need to encourage people to save more money and take more responsibility for their retirement. And in that respect, any kind of educational programs or incentives that we can provide to make that happen, I think is going to be a positive for everybody. But to say that you need to go off and start your own plan, that's a substantial amount of money you're going to have to come up with to get this thing up and running and keep it in compliance. And the other issue you got, if you have the state treasurer's office managing the investments, then there's a risk there that, you know, that could come back on the state in terms of their fiduciary responsibility. So, I mean, it's a lot bigger than $3 million, I'll tell you that right now.
Senator Sam Cann says as the legislation was portrayed to him, the retirement program would be serving a niche group of people who have not been able to save in the past. State Treasurer John Perdue says he's correct. The state-run program will focus on low-wage employees able to only put away $5 or $10 at a time. Still, Senate Minority Leader Mike Hall felt the program is unnecessary. He says the private sector is already able to offer the same types of programs to employers and employees, and instead, the state treasurer should be working with the industry as it has on other projects to raise awareness and educate the public.
I agree with your mission, but I think you've already got a whole ready-made group to help you. And I wouldn't want to be in competition with them. I would just try to bring them in and say, let's garner all the resources we've got here and try to solve this problem.
That is not the niche, Senator, that those 10,000 or 1,000 or whoever they are out there are going after. They are not going after the people that we're going to go after in this state. They'll make a difference in saving for the future of this great state. That $5 or $10. They're not interested in those people. You know that.
Hall disagreed. Still, Perdue says 19 other states are looking to put similar programs in place, and California and Massachusetts have already taken legislative steps.
The field's being plowed out there in a lot of states, and, you know, you don't have to be last every time in something.
All right.
It's nice to be first every once in a while.
I think we can be a leader.
Senator Sam Cann moved to amend the bill, allowing employers with up to 50 employees to participate in the program rather than the 100 as passed by the House. Committee members passed the bill as amended, and it now moves to the Finance Committee for their consideration. In a moment, the state budget is troublesome. We'll talk about that with two members of the Capitol Press Corps. First, here's a look at what's coming up in the Senate on Monday. Up for passage, House Bill 4384, requiring teachers of special needs students to be present at an individualized education program meeting or to read and sign a copy of the IEP, including teachers of music, art, and driver education. Among the bills on second reading, House Bill 4003, to grant dual jurisdiction to counties where a student who lives in one county and attends school in another in order to enforce truancy policies. House Bill 4151, relating to professional licensing requirements for certain military members and their spouses. House Bill 4301, allowing limited reciprocal use of hunting and fishing licenses with the Commonwealth of Kentucky and the Big Sandy and Tug Fork Rivers. House Bill 4402, providing a procedure for the conditional discharge for first offense underage drinking. House Bill 4421, allowing the lottery to pay prizes via electronic transfer. And House Bill 4437, to allow the Division of Juvenile Services to maintain trustee bank accounts, earnings, and property for its residents in the same manner as accounts are handled by the Division of Corrections. On the night of his State of the State address, Governor Tomlin presented members of the House and Senate with his proposed budget for the next fiscal year. In January, that budget called for a one-time drawdown from the state's rainy day fund for the first time since it was created more than 20 years ago. The almost $84 million needed from the Revenue Shortfall Reserve, as it's officially titled, is dependent on the passage of other legislation. However, and it could grow before it's all said and done. To talk to us about that legislation and other that legislation with major budget implications is Phil Kabler, veteran State House reporter for the Charleston Gazette, and Dave Boucher, State House reporter for the Charleston Daily Mail. Gentlemen, thank you both so much for joining us this evening. So let's start with that rainy day fund, $84 million, but as the governor's legislation makes its way through both the House and the Senate, as it passes or fails, that number could change, and that's a pretty big number.
Sure, and it's certainly been, like you said, an issue. It's a first-time issue, and there's about $53 million, give or take, in bills that the governor needed to pass in order to balance his budget. Some of those bills have passed, some of them aren't going to pass, and so they're trying to figure that out right now with potentially using more of the rainy day fund.
I think one of those bills that failed and kind of abruptly was there were two bills that were specially earmarked to come out of Senate Transportation, totaling about $17 million, if I'm correct, and that committee just didn't take them up. Those bills died.
Yeah, so I think there was a lot of reluctance to tap and take money out of the road fund to put into general revenue at a time when the roads are so terrible right now, even though $19 million is a fairly small amount for road building, but they were reluctant to touch that for that reason.
I think we've seen that reluctance also on the floor. I mean, as far as Senator Bob Plymel has made floor speeches about how we need to look at this road issue. I think that's obviously a big budget crunch right now. But before the session, Governor Tomlin, some of the leadership, they met with financial advisors in New York, trying to figure out how much we can draw down from the rainy day fund before it hurts the state. The state bond rating. What is that number? Do we have a number?
Well, right now, the rainy day fund is about $920 million, which sounds like a lot of money, but it's about equal to about 22% of the total general revenue budget. And the Wall Street advisors said not to go below 15%, or you'll start affecting your bond ratings. So that gives them maybe $200 million to play with, although there's, again, reluctance to, the fear is once you dip into the rainy day fund one time, then subsequent legislatures will come back and just raid it again till it's emptied. But the advice is not to go more than $200 million into the fund this session if you want to keep your bond rating solid.
So fear we're setting a precedent.
Yeah, and on top of that, too, there's that $920-ish million, but only about half of it is readily available the way the law stands right now. The other half is from a lawsuit settlement, and the legislature can't touch it. So really, that $200 is close to half the amount of money that
people,
they can...
People don't realize there's two rainy day funds, rainy day A and B, and they have roughly... pretty close to $450 million in one and close to $500 million in the other. But, yeah, one is cannot be touched, and I'm not sure what sort of legislative action would be necessary to get into rainy day B. But combined, they determine the bond ratings. So
let's move on to some of this legislation that will eventually affect the bottom line. A lot of talk right now about this haircut bill, which seems like a simple name, but it's a very complex piece of legislation. So, Dave, what does this bill do?
Sure. So, obviously, the name haircut comes from the idea of trimming some costs and some allocations for some funds. Originally proposed, it was some 15% cuts, and it would apply and essentially take away funding for cities and counties. A lot of consternation when that came out, and in the new rendition of the bill, it's House Bill 4333, that has been changed to 10% cuts to certain funds, and also there's been an exemption for cities and counties. And so revenue coming in from casinos or lottery or racing or just any sort of gambling revenue like that that the cities and counties depend on won't be cut through this particular piece of legislation. I'm looking at the cuts right now. The largest single cut to a statutory fund right now is about $4.8 million to racetrack purse funds. There's also, in addition, the bill represents close to $40 million. There's another about $20 million that's being cut from the Infrastructure Council Fund and another $5 million from the Development Office Promotion Fund.
So lots of numbers, lots of cuts. This is a bill that Governor Tomlin is backing. I think it's probably obvious that the industry, the horse racing industry, is not going to be for something like this. But Phil, what are lawmakers saying about this bill right now? It's important for the budget?
If they don't get the $35 million that this bill would provide for general revenue, then you've really, really got some budget problems. So In fact, the bill passed by a larger margin in the House than I had expected, but the horse racing and greyhound racing industry will probably redouble efforts, because this is the first time there's been any attempt to cut their racing subsidies from lottery funds. So they won't go down without a fight, I don't think.
So all this talk of having budget troubles, and it's an election year, so no talk of raising taxes anywhere. The Senate did pass the tobacco tax, which they thought that people could stomach, but the House is saying, we're not going to go there.
Yeah, almost the same time that Senate President Kessler was arguing how important it was to have this new source of revenue, House Democrats were caucusing in one of their, I guess now, lengthy caucus sessions, and they came out right after that and said, no, we don't really think that we can have any sort of tax. And it's not just the tobacco tax. They said, you know, they had maybe talked about other potential taxes and said, no, that's just not going to happen this year.
Phil, are they backing themselves into a corner? We've seen years and years of tax cuts.
Yeah, and you could say that a lot of the budget problems are self-inflicted, since they've, over the past few years, reduced business franchise, corporate net taxes, eliminated the sales tax on food, which conservatively is anywhere from $360 million to more than $400 million missing out of the current budget. So you could say that if they hadn't enacted these tax cuts to begin with, we wouldn't have a budget crunch at the moment.
And on top of that, the budget's been so volatile, and the collections that have come into the state have been so volatile, and the estimates have been so off. I know just a couple weeks ago, there was estimates that we would be about $60 million short heading into the end of the budget year, and now they're saying it could be as high as $120 million, which is obviously very, very different. And just so that uncertainty with the budget, plus renewed, or just all these budget cuts, or the tax cuts on top of that, are obviously making for a difficult budgeting session here at the end.
Phil, I want to bring up something briefly you wrote in your column, I believe this week, that it might be good for them to wait until May, as they had done in 2009 under Governor Manchin, to take up the budget. I realize they were in a different situation then.
Well, then they were waiting to see what sort of federal stimulus money would be coming in, so they use the extra month, because that was a year where the session began late. They use the extra month to get those numbers in. And while the numbers aren't likely to improve this year, I thought the break worked well as far as allowing time to let tensions ease a little bit. And
But likely we're going to go into our regular session. It would be very unlikely,
but if I were governor, I would consider it. But I think they'll go with the budget session coming up the week after the regular session, as usual.
As we typically do. Well, Dave Boucher with the Charleston Daily Mail, Phil Kabler with the Charleston Gazette, thank you both for being here this evening. A lot of numbers, but some good discussion.
Thanks.
And here's a look at what's coming up in the House on Monday. Up for passage, Senate Bill 460 to add the West Virginia School of Osteopathic Medicine to the list of state institutions of higher education that are permitted to invest certain monies with its foundation. The bill limits the amount that may be invested to $25 million. Among the bills on second reading, Senate Bill 12, related to expedited partner therapy treatment for sexually transmitted diseases. Senate Bill 90, creating a criminal offense for interfering or preventing someone from calling for emergency assistance. Senate Bill 322, providing the state compensate officials, officers, and employees every 2 weeks. Senate Bill 328, the governor's bill to terminate the Strategic Research and Development Tax Credit. Senate Bill 405, requiring a presiding judge's permission to release juror qualification forms after a trial's conclusion. And Senate Bill 470, providing that completed grand jury questionnaires are confidential. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for legislative coverage provided by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org, and by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at wvaflcio.org. West Virginia Public Radio, telling West Virginia's story, and online at wbpublic.org.